My first guest this morning will be Dr. Arup Mangalik. He's an oncologist at University of New Mexico and an advocate of what he calls a judicious death and an advocate of assisted suicide. And later on in the show, we'll hear from Kim Kyle, president of Horizon Sustainable Financial Services of Santa Fe. Good morning, Dr. Mangalik. So glad you could join us today.
Good morning.
I want to start with having you tell us a little bit about your background as an oncologist and your work in this arena of appropriate end-of-life care.
I would like to start off by saying that I'm speaking for myself as an individual, and I do not represent necessarily the University of New Mexico or the Health Sciences Center.
Of course, that's very important, and we recognize you are an individual. And I do want to mention before we go on that you can hear more from Dr. Mangalik this Sunday at 11 a.m. at Journey Santa Fe. It's an organization that sponsors talks on issues of deep importance, and that talk will be happening at Collected Works Bookstore at 202 Galisteo Street, Sunday at 11 a.m. So go ahead, Dr. Mangalik. Tell me how you got involved in this.
Yeah, I have been an oncologist now for about 40 years. And I've been treating patients with cancer. And for the last 15 to 20 years, I was struck by the number of patients who had very little, if any, chance of getting benefit from the treatment. And these patients would have been much better served if they were given comfort before they died. And unfortunately, for a variety of reasons, patients are treated actively, not just in cancer, but in many kinds of diseases. Doctors continue to treat them, and which only causes hardship for the patient without giving them comfort. And for that reason, I have become an advocate for comfort before death. I'm not opposed to giving treatment. Of course, it should be given when it is appropriate, but we should recognize that at a certain point, medical technology will not help the patient, but comfort will.
We talked a little bit the other day about the data that shows how much of our medical dollars are in the United States are spent at the very end of life. Could you tell me a little about that?
Yes, Medicare has studied this problem, and they have estimated that in the last 3 months of life, approximately 25% of Medicare dollars are spent in keeping patients in intensive care and other high-tech facilities, and lots of money is spent. And at the end of that, most patients either die or are not in a condition to be functional or have a happy life. So the cost, dollar cost, apart from the discomfort cost, the dollar cost also is very high.
So, Dr. Mangalik, give me some examples of the kinds of treatments that physicians may recommend a patient continue to have when the patient is, in fact, very close to the end of life.
Starting at the extreme end, there are patients who are put on intensive care, and they remain on intensive care for several days. And there is a lot of information and data available showing that if the intensive care unit, the patient does not improve in a matter of 2 to 3 days, and the chances of them in recovering are extremely small. They develop more and more damage to, heart and lung and kidneys and so on, and these organs keep failing. But for a variety of reasons, some from the side of the family and the patient, some from the side of the doctors, these kinds of treatments are continued, and it only causes discomfort to the family, patient, and even to the doctors and nurses who take care of them. It is very disconcerting to be putting all these needles and catheters and monitors on the patient, and the patient gets nothing out of it except being away from the family. We are strongly in favor of patients dying in peace with the family around them, and the patient is comfortable and then can say their goodbyes.
And Dr. Mangalik, this can also include not just treatments, like say the patient is on ICU and they've got the patient on a ventilator. Maybe they're even doing dialysis because they're in renal failure. They're doing all kinds of things to the patient, which we see all these things on TV and we think, oh, big deal. But in fact, many of these things are quite painful. And also that they also continue to test patients. I remember, just to be very personal, at the end of my father's life, how they were ordering endoscopies and colonoscopies and all of these tests when he was weeks from his death, and that was very evident. So, go ahead.
Yeah, that is correct. We sometimes forget that what the goal is, and we keep doing medical treatments as if the patient is going to live for a long time afterwards when there has been multi-organ failure. And I may add a statement which was given to me by one of the young doctors recently, and said that the intensive care unit is a bridge to health. If you are not healthy to begin with, you have no bridge to use. Patients who are chronically ill, who have liver failure, severe emphysema, severe heart failure, cancer which is not responding to treatment, dementia, all these patients, even if the intensive care treatments are helpful to reverse the immediate problem, the patient is not going to be healthy. And therefore, this is a waste of resources, personnel, as well as financial resources, and it is a hardship on everybody.
So let's talk about some of the reasons that this happens. Let's talk first about what happens with families. When your mother or father is very ill, near the end of life, what are the reasons that families insist that treatments be continued and solutions be sought?
One big reason for the families to feel that way is that the hype in the media, when they present medical advances, they don't present them as an advance, they present it as a breakthrough. And the public gets the impression that there are magical cures available, which is just not the case. Medicine has improved a lot, but certainly it is nowhere near perfect, and people are going to die. But the media make it sound as if right things are done, everybody will live.
Yes, and that is why it's a reflection of our culture's total denial of death, so to
yes.
speak.
In yes. fact, it is not obviously true, but some people have even said that in this country, a lot of people think that death is optional, and which is an unfortunate way of thinking. And going back to the media, the show ER from the 90s, somebody actually counted that, and they found as shown on ER, 70%+ of patients recovered from the intensive care and then just walked out of the hospital. The reality is that somewhere around 10% of patients recover if they are in the intensive care and get the cardiopulmonary resuscitation, CPR. And even those people are not healthy when they are successfully treated. They're still very, very sick.
Yes.
So it's a misconception provided by the media. And then, as I said, the hype, the doctors are to blame in the sense that we talk about our advancing medicine, which is true, but it is not put in perspective. People are made to believe that it will be just a magical treatment and everything will be fine.
And what about the role of doctors as one of the reasons that, because after all, it is the doctors who are saying to the family, now I think we should do this treatment, now I think we should do that test.
Yes, doctors are trained through their medical school and through their residency. They're trained not to accept failure. And many doctors are brought up with the idea that if the patient dies or if the disease progresses, it is a failure. And unfortunately, that is a common feeling amongst many doctors. The reality is that we have to accept what nature provides us. And if you are confident that you are doing the right thing. You definitely, if you treat somebody, you look back and say, oh, I could have done this, then you fix that problem. But if you are doing the right thing, doing the best possible treatment, then patients getting worse or patients dying is not a failure, it is a reality.
Yes,
and doctors are trained to think that it's a failure.
Yes, but helping the patient to a comfortable and peaceful death is the greatest success in most
exactly.
cases. I want to stop for just a minute and let listeners who just tuned in know that I'm talking with Dr. Arup Mangalik. He's an oncologist who's an advocate of what he calls a judicious death and an advocate of assisted suicide. Dr. Mangalik is going to be speaking at a gathering of Journey Santa Fe at Sunday at 11 a.m. at Collected Works Bookstore at 202 Galisteo Street, so you can hear more from him then. So, Dr. Mangalik, I want to talk a little bit about how you got involved with the idea of compassion and choices.
Yes. Compassion and Choices is an organization which has been around for about 30 years. And they are the ones which advocated for and were able to pass the legislation in Oregon and Washington states by explaining to the public that a comfortable death is a good thing. And the step that they have taken beyond not treating, there's one step is that you don't treat and let the patient be in comfort. But their advocacy is that in certain situations, it is not enough to just to give pain medications, because despite pain medications, for a variety of reasons, the patient is not able to feel good. And what we are advocating is that if patient is in that situation, and if the patient wants to end their life sooner than later, and they are, in any case, they are going to die from this disease, then the patient should have the right to take a lethal dose and kill themselves sooner than later. And we are advocating and have filed a lawsuit against the state of New Mexico to clarify the law in this regard. We are not asking the patients to ask for it. The patient is the one who chooses to take the medication. The patient is the one who asks the doctor. And the doctor, if it is considered legal and comfortable, then the doctor can prescribe the medication. The patient may or may not fill the prescription. And even after they fill the prescription, very often the patient says, I just want to have it around in case I need it. And many patients do that. They take the prescription, have it around, but then they allow themselves to die in the normal way. But some patients feel that it is a burden for themselves, burden for the family, and they would rather end it at a time of their choosing. So choice is a big part of this. And we are advocating that this be pursued and it should become legal.
So, Dr. Mangalik, what happens if the patient is not able, in the case that this law would be passed in New Mexico, what if the patient is unable to actually take the medication him or herself?
Unfortunately, that is a limitation in the system as a whole.
Uh-huh.
And that is a different, if the doctor or a medical professional or even a family member helps the patient to take the medication, that is considered to be euthanasia.
Yes.
And euthanasia is a different category. At least in this country, it is considered to be a very different category, and it is not allowed.
It's a different legal category.
Yes.
So
we are only advocating that the patient be the one who asks for it, patient be of sound mind, and the patient, in any case, we know is going to be dying in the very near future.
So what is your realistic expectation of about this lawsuit and about the proposed legality of assisted suicide in New Mexico?
As you know, nobody can predict how the courts will rule.
Yes.
That's something we have to wait and see. But all I can say is that polls have been conducted in New Mexico and in the country, and the support rate in New Mexico was about 60% supported this initiative. And of these 60%, I mean, these 60% included both males and females, young and old, educated and less educated, and people of different faiths. All groups of people supported this.
I think it may be true that for most people, that everyone has some fear of death. Even people who have done a lot of conscious work to come to grips with their own mortality. But more so than death, people fear pain and the loss of control that can happen at the end of life.
That is correct. And that is why we are saying that there is a fear of death. But once you accept that death is not just something which will happen, but death is going to happen soon, then the fear of lack of control and fear of pain is stronger than the fear of death.
Yes.
And that is why people are taking these medications to relieve themselves of this fear and this actual pain.
Let's talk again about being at the end of life or having a loved one at the end of life and wanting to do the right thing, wanting to make sure that you, yourself, or your loved one is made comfortable, that things aren't done to them that are unnecessary. How do you make those decisions? How do you talk to the doctors about the things they're suggesting you do?
I think the patients have what has been often called the white coat syndrome.
Yes.
And it's not just that your blood pressure and your heart rate goes up when you see the doctor. You very often forget that you are the main person in that encounter. You, the patient, is the one who should be in control. And therefore, if the doctor recommends to you that we can try this treatment, it is up to the patient to say, "Doctor, yes, I'm glad you are recommending a treatment, but can you tell me more about this treatment? What are the chances of this treatment working? How long will the treatment work for? How much side effects will I have? And don't forget the cost. It's not just a matter of what Medicare has to pay. Out-of-pocket costs for end of life are also very large. And the numbers that I have heard, the statistic that I heard is that end of life and medical bills is the largest, commonest cause of bankruptcy in the country.
Yes.
And that is because very often it is not just because you had a treatable disease and you didn't have insurance. And there you can recover the cost if you have a treatable disease. But when you have a disease which is not going to be controlled, the costs are extremely high. So again, the patient, even though it's very difficult, the patient should be the one who should advocate for themselves and just make sure that the doctor, what the doctor is recommending, has some significant meaning. Let me give an example of doctor's perception of effective treatment. There's somebody with a severe heart damage and they're in heart failure. The doctor may have a number of treatments which can improve the function of the heart as we determine it by the various laboratory tests. But what we often find is that the laboratory test may show improvement, but the patient does not feel better. And it is for the patient to ask the doctor, will it be just a matter of improving my test, or will it be an improvement of my feeling and the way I feel? It's not just a matter of life and duration of life. It is also the issue of, will I feel better if I take this treatment?
Right. And I think we have to interject here and say that, you know, it's important not to avoid or to discount the psychosocial or the psychological and spiritual aspects of coming to the end of life. And too often that doesn't get talked about with physicians especially. They don't know how to talk with their patients about that. Patients may feel, and their families may feel, that they have to keep doing treatments. Sometimes patients feel they have to keep doing treatments because their family wants them to. And so you and I talked a little bit about advanced directives and how important those are to have in writing what you, the patient, want to have happen if you are near the end of life and certain things occur. But most important, you've said, is to talk about those things.
Yes. Advanced directives are a very important part of the whole process. And the patient, not when they are very sick, but even before they are sick, patients should talk to their family and all the people around them and explain to them what they would like to have. And it is a question of explaining it properly to themselves, understanding it. There are lots of information available on this score, and they should get the information and say, I don't want to be dying in an intensive care with tubes and ventilators and so on. I want to die in your arms, talking to you and comfortably.
I may mention
one thing which I didn't bring up earlier, that the hospice movement and the palliative care movement are something which has been a very successful movement in the past about 20 years now, but gradually getting more and more importance. And they provide a lot of comfort. And the availability of hospice in no way contradicts what our initiative
right.
is saying.
Right.
Hospice
Dr. Mangalik,
continues.
I'm going to have to stop you there. I've been talking to Dr. Arup Mangalik, an oncologist who's an advocate of a judicious death and an advocate of assisted suicide. He's going to be speaking at a gathering called Journey Santa Fe on Sunday, June 30th at 11 a.m. That's at Collected Works Bookstore at 202 Galisteo Street. Thank you so much for being with me today, Dr. Mangalik.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break now. Please stay tuned to the Radio Cafe.